This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. This is Jess Root from CardsWire.com. NFL wire site from the USA Today family of sites, and my co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's NFL site for the Arizona Cardinals. This is episode 237, and if you're hearing both of us, that means it went well after last week's. I don't know what happened with the recording, but just disappeared, and you got a bonus episode of, well, you missed out on a fantastic conversation between me and Seth, and instead just had to listen to me for nearly an hour. But we're assuming that all will go well technologically because I don't know what happened before or why. It just happened. So we're now with our season preview. Seth, are you ready for some actual meaningful football? No more preseason games. No more guessing about the roster. No more cloak and dagger with the offense. It's real now.
Yeah, we're there. It's time. It's what we've been waiting for. And, you know, you and I talked about it, and our compadres at the Detroit Lions site, we've kind of tried to explain, like, hey, we really don't know at this point what anything's going to look like because they've just, like you said, it's been cloak and dagger. It's been, oh, here's a little something, but all right, we'll wait till the close practices to show a little more or do a little more. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this all comes out. Was it worth all the hiding? Was it worth all the, you know, theatrics about it? And you hope it's quick and to that point before there's the inevitable, you know, rookie lumps and new head coaching lumps and things like that. You hope it doesn't take too long.
Right. And so tonight's episode, recording on a Tuesday night, so you'll hear it sometime on Wednesday or Thursday or something like that. This is episode 237. This is our season preview. We're going to talk about roster cuts as the Cardinals had to cut down their roster to 53 players. We're going to react to those decisions they made, what surprises there might have been, and, you know, what we can kind of guess what the offense is going to look like now that we have the personnel. We're going to talk about the waiver claims, the practice squad, and then we're going to talk about predictions. We're going to talk about what we predict the players will produce. We're going to talk about what we think the record will be with some concerns that we think will come up. Then we'll look ahead to their week one, the season opener against the Lions, talk about what we know about the Lions, and then discuss some predictions and some matchups and things like that. So that's coming up on this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, your best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Seth, let's talk about those roster reactions, the roster cuts. For you, were there any surprises when they cut down the rosters?
I thought more than anything name-wise, it was just surprising of how they constructed the roster. You and I were, I mean, and we were honestly guessing. I mean, we weren't trying to, you know, BS anybody. We had no idea. This is completely new. We were kind of throwing darts. I think we both hit it out of the park at the wide receiver position. We both kind of intimated that we only were comfortable with two tight ends, and we were just putting that third tight end on the roster because that's how rosters are built. But
true.
But we talked about it quite a bit because we said this is new, and you know, the way Cliff Kingsbury is going to deploy his offense is going to be more heavily focused on wide receivers than it is going to be on tight ends. And then if you are going to be a tight end, you better be multifaceted and not just a one-dimensional type of guy, because if you're one-dimensional, meaning a receiver or just a blocker, then you don't fit because, well, then I can get a blocker by adding an offensive lineman. I can get a receiver by putting a wide receiver out there. So I thought at the beginning four running backs was heavy, and then they cut TJ Logan the next day. So that, you know, that made sense. I was surprised DJ Foster made it over TJ Logan, but then you kind of go back. DJ's, you know, a more versatile. I mean, if you just look at the running back room, they're basically like the same three skill sets, just with diminishing returns as you go down the depth chart, right? Like David Johnson's the best, and Chase Edmonds is a lot like David Johnson, just not as skilled yet. And then DJ Foster is a lot like David Johnson and Chase Edmonds, just not as skilled. And so having three similar players in that role makes sense. I mean, the offensive line, that was a coin flip on who they were going to keep. I think you and I were both only surprised by the what Vunovich or whatever.
I personally, on the what I wrote, thought that he's a guy that on the outside could make it. And honestly, I thought Vunovich was on the roster so they could trade him. With all these odd offensive lineman trades going out through the league, I thought for sure they were going to pull a trade for him because he does seem a little redundant on the roster already.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was the only kind of different one. And then you look at the defense, you and I had been kind of warned, heads up, that Miles Brown was somebody this team really liked. And then he's on the roster, so I guess that was good information for us. Overall, I thought it made sense. I've got to say, like, the initial roster with the cornerback position at first, I was like, what is going on? Because they had five, but we knew two were going to go away very quickly. And so that left three, and you're like, you can't go into the first – like, I don't even care about anything else. Like, you just need another body in the room in case anything goes wrong, because you have to have at least four active corners on game day. And so then it was like, are they going to use Buddha out there? Like, how's this all going to work? And then, you know, they made that, I thought, their best pickup of the waiver period. So, you know, it's – overall, I just think it's been really – it's different. It's kind of in the same realm as everything else that's happened this offseason. It's just not the way. It's just not the way that normal NFL teams go. But at the same time, this has never been normal, right?
There hasn't really been a normal thing about this entire offseason. Going back to firing Steve Wilks, but keeping Steve Keim and putting all the trust in Steve Keim to build. So then they hire the unorthodox coach. They give up on their first round pick the year before to take a new first round pick quarterback. It's been one very, very interesting offseason. For me, the surprise, probably the biggest surprise, and maybe it shouldn't surprise me, is the fact that when they made cuts, they didn't even bother to keep 53 players. They didn't even bother to fill the roster because they knew they were good. They didn't even like the players enough to fill basically three roster spots. They basically liked 50 players that they had. And they kept Robert Alford because they had to keep him on the roster for at least a day to get him to week one so that he could be put on IR so he would be eligible to return. But essentially, they only liked 50 players on their roster. This is basically what they were saying. Because then they go out and I guess maybe that was being a little more straightforward, and maybe that was a Cliff Kingsbury thing, because what he said leading up to roster cuts, that he wanted to be straightforward with, because he said he was cut six or seven times in his career. And so the biggest thing is about being upfront and forward with them. And why get, when you know you're going to be picking up guys from other rosters, you know, off waivers, because with the number one spot, anyone you want, you get. It's guaranteed. On other times where they're a little bit further down, you want to keep your roster full at 53 because you don't know exactly who you're going to get. And the Cardinals knew exactly who they were going to get. They saw the list. Okay, we want this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy. And instead of telling these guys, okay, they get their hopes up, they were going to be on the team. Instead, they know, okay, we know you're going to be replaced anyway, so we didn't even bother. And they brought a few guys back on the practice squad. And so that for me, that was the biggest surprise. Vujinovic might have been a surprise for me, though, again, like I said, I thought that would end up being a trade piece. Initially, I was surprised that they kept as many inside linebackers, that they kept all six of those inside linebackers, including Dennis Gardeck and Tanner Vallejo. And because you didn't figure they were going to keep all of them. But other than that, there were not any big surprises. But if we look at the roster and how it's set up, I guess offensively we have to figure that with only two tight ends, they really are going to go, we think, with the 10 and 11 personnel, right? That's basically it. Maybe a smattering of 12 with two tight ends. And then if they really, 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 really want to go big, they'll use an offensive lineman. And Cliff Kingsbury said as much, that they're going to use Mason Cole or one of their young tackles as an extra blocker. That might be something that happens. But I think by now, I think we know if there's only two tight ends on the roster, guess what? They're not going to use two tight ends a whole lot, because then they'd run the risk of losing a guy.
Yeah, and the reality is this offense, you'll see two tight ends some of the time, but for the most part, it's going to be a lot of it's going to be just a lot of, you know, three wide receiver and four wide receiver personnel. And like I said, in that case, you need to have options at wide receiver. You need to have options with guys that offer, you know, different abilities. So, I mean, in the end, I think the roster makes sense for what it is. It's obviously lacking in depth at this point, but I don't think that's out of the ordinary for a team that basically is spent the last 2 years rebuilding.
Now, coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit more about the roster, but we're going to look at the waiver claims, the additions, the signings, and then how they constructed the practice squad. That's coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. So the Cardinals make their initial roster moves. They start with 51 players, but essentially 50, and they pick up five waiver claims. They land two offensive linemen, Justin Murray and Brett Toth. They land a defensive lineman in Jonathan Bullard, and then a pair of defensive backs, cornerback Kevin Peterson, formerly of the Rams, and safety Charles Washington of the Detroit Lions. Seth, tell us about these. You wrote something on Revenge of the Birds about Kevin Peterson, and you are very high on this pickup. Tell us why.
You know, you look at Peterson and what he's kind of done in limited action. So, I mean, he's a guy that's bounced between the practice squad and the active roster for the Rams the last, you know, in 2017. And he finally got a shot with the Rams. He played in about six games late, and then he started one. And, I mean, it was one game. And so, you know, you have to take that with a grain of salt. But that one game was probably the best played game by a cornerback that year. He had two interceptions. He forced a fumble. He had eight tackles. He was just all over the field. He only allowed one reception for 15 yards. You know, fast forward to 2018, and on what is a Super Bowl team, he's going to make the roster. I mean, there was just that was the, you know, scuttle out of camp, and then he tears his ACL in the preseason. And at that point, you know, things happen. It makes it a little easier for the Rams to move on with the guys they had. And so then, you know, the Rams being a team in terms of trying to get to the Super Bowl versus a team that is just trying to find, you know, start stacking wins again in the Cardinals, the Rams had the ability just to let him go. They don't have time for guys to get healthy. And Peterson is healthy, but they don't have time for guys to get healthy. They don't have time for guys to figure it out. They're in a just right now a different area than the Cardinals, but that played well for the Cardinals. Peterson has been one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL this preseason. And, you take that with a grain of salt again, but it's better than the alternative, which was what we saw in the preseason by Dietrich Nichols. Even Nate Brooks at times was struggling. Obviously, Brandon Williams played in one game and gave up a touchdown. I mean, it's like clockwork in the preseason. And so you look at Kevin Peterson, he's, he was heavily targeted in the preseason. He held his own. Every chance he's had to play, he's made plays and looked good doing it. So in that case, it's the perfect 6-week experiment. There's a good chance you could end up with a guy that's a starting level corner, or there's a good chance you end up with a guy that you just cut when Patrick Peterson comes back from suspension. So, it's a win-win situation in the end. You take a chance on a young guy that's had some incredibly bright moments in the NFL, and then you just wait.
Yeah, and Peterson is a nice addition, and what's more for me, the fit. He, having played in the Wade Phillips defense, I'm going to point this out again. Vance Joseph's defense is a Wade Phillips defense. It's the guy that brought him into the lead. He is a Wade Phillips disciple, that sort of thing. So Peterson will come in and probably fit really well. And it's a nice addition, especially when Chris Jones, we'll got to wait and see on that. He looked great in the preseason. He looked really good in the preseason. But we also have seen flashes in the pan type guys. Brandon Williams looked great briefly, and it looked terrible as a rookie. So it's good to have a guy that's got a little bit of experience in this type of defense who could, in a pinch, be a replacement for Chris Jones, because Chris Jones is going to be your corner three. Byron Murphy's going to play outside and inside. He will slide inside for when Jones comes to the game in nickel. So we'll have to wait and see on what goes with that. Now, the waiver claims for me, what probably is the most interesting thing to me was because they wanted to improve on the offensive line, and yet the two guys they claim, and this was going to happen, they claimed guys that aren't particularly experienced. The first name that came out, Brett Toth, didn't make any sense at all to me, unless they like his upside. Because if you were going to... When Justin Murray's name came out, that made a little more sense. But when you're thinking, oh, so they've got Joshua Miles and Brett Toth, those are backup tackles. Really? So neither one of your backup tackles has played a single down in the league. And Toth didn't even make the team he didn't even make the team. Justin Murray is an interesting upside because he's got some versatility. And the Raiders, believe it or not, are a team that have a little bit of depth on the offensive line. So it wasn't like a bad offensive line team cutting a guy. This wasn't like the Cardinals, for example, cutting an offensive line and picking them up. You get a little bit of experience. He doesn't have a lot of game experience. In fact, does he have any game experience? I don't remember. Justin Murray.
No, he has no game experience.
He has no game experience, but at least he's been on a roster. No, he played two games last year. And that's two games more than you or I, but he's actually been in, and he's been around the league since 2016. So that's the interesting thing is he's been in the league since 2016, but has played in two games and has apparently never made a roster ever. In 2016, he didn't make the roster. 2017, he didn't make a roster. Last year, he didn't make the roster. And even this year, he didn't make the roster. So it'll be interesting, though from what,
why, yeah.
Gambo John Gambadoro on the radio, like, he got some information. He's versatile. He can play four positions on the line, and they had him as one of the top tackles available. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. They expect Cliff Kingsbury expects one of the two guys to be kind of one of the guys who could be a play tackle to be available on Sunday and the other not. If you look at the depth chart, it has Brett Toth as the backup right tackle with Justin Murray as the second backup left tackle behind Miles. So we'll have to wait and see on that. Charles Washington is an interesting guy, and I'll have to point this out to Blake for kind of putting two and two together. So essentially, Charles Washington, the Cardinals went and traded their number five safety in Rudy Ford, who is basically a special teams guy. So they trade him for defensive lineman, who they end up cutting. And then they claim a guy in Washington who only played special teams last year. So that's an interesting move. I don't know much about Charles Washington other than what I've just read, that he loves special teams. He played a lot of special teams for the Lions. But it's kind of interesting that you made that move. You trade a guy that you weren't going to keep, and then you sign another guy who's going to have his exact role.
Yeah, and, you know, it was interesting. We talked about, or I tweeted about it, like, you know, when you and I didn't think they'd cut Bruce Hector, and then they cut Bruce Hector. I guess that's, you know, what happens when you sign Clint McDonald, and you and I should have just stuck with what we knew about their love of Miles Brown, I guess, right? We should have just gone with it because that's what we heard. But we thought, there's no way that they're going to cut the guy that they just traded for, is there? So, you know, when you look at it, the pickups, you know, make a lot of sense from positional standpoints. I, you know, like you said, with Murray and Toth, I honestly, I don't know. I mean, I can't. Here's what I'll tell you. Like, a contact we have, I asked if the Corey Cunningham trade was going to lead to, like, something bigger. And his response was, LOL, we were told to find somebody better in July. So the answer was no.
That's, like, hilarious. Because everyone thought, oh, something bigger's coming.
Right. Yeah, and Brett so, you know, that was basically what we were told. Is like, no, like, this was just the fact that they had, and again, who's they? I'm not sure. I didn't, you know, ask for specifics, but it was basically they didn't think that highly of Corey. He hadn't played that well in the preseason. I mean, he'd been better than Reese Odhiambo, but, like, he hadn't actually been great, and so they just had basically heard, like, hey, find a upgrade. And, you know, we talked about this a little bit last week on the show that didn't air. It's always nerve-wracking when the Patriots trade for a guy, but in the same token, like, the reality of the situation is the Patriots have the best offensive line coach maybe in NFL history. So it doesn't matter. Like, whatever they're doing, you can't compare to anybody else because they have Dante, you know, Italian last name. And the Arizona Cardinals and everybody else have their offensive line coach. So it literally doesn't matter. You can't compare them. So when you look at it positional-wise, it makes sense. We didn't even talk about Jonathan Bullard, really. The last guy they kind of claimed. Bullard's he's a true depth guy. He's nothing more. He's not a upside starter. He's just a guy that can come in and play on that 34 line for 10 to 15 snaps a game. He's a high level, high energy kind of guy. He's never panned out in Chicago. He didn't pan out in the Vic Fangio defense, so I'm not saying it's impossible that he can't pan out in the Vance Joseph defense, but if you were going to ask me, who would get the most out of somebody. It's either Fangio or Wade Phillips, right? So
yeah. And do you see him being more the, if you had to pick who's going to be inactive a game, because I imagine they'll probably have six active on game day. Is it going to be more Bullard, or you think that'll be Brown?
I think early it's going to be Brown. But, you know, I don't know, because I don't know how they're going to change this rotation now, because the whole idea was that you had these three kind of interchangeable pieces in Filon, Gunter, and Peters, and now it's Gunter and Peters, and then a bunch of, you know, true defensive end tackle guys, not nose tackles. So, you know, if you consider that Brown is really your only true, like, zero technique guy, then maybe he's active. But I think initially you're going to see the active guy be Bullard and not Brown.
In the practice squad, you don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this, but the funny thing is how they went about it, because they went quickly and re-signed seven of their guys. But now that the practice squad is full, they have let go of four of those guys that they had in the preseason. So clearly they were not that sold on those guys. So Drew Anderson, A.J. Richardson, what's his name?
Nate Brooks.
And who was the other guy that they just cut today?
I'll grab it real quick.
I should know this because I just wrote about it.
They send us too many emails.
I get so many emails. Oh, Vontarius Dora. That's right.
Yeah, Vontarius Dora. Thank you.
And they replaced Dora with Pete Robertson. Oh, we didn't even talk about Cassius Marsh. Goodness.
Oh, yeah.
That is a nice pickup, because they picked up Cassius Mark not off waivers, but thanks to
They signed him.
They signed him off that. Now we'll have to wait and see what that contract looks like, but he is bitter. He is a bitter man to the 49ers and to the Seahawks, who just cut him because they traded for Jadeveon Clowney. That's something to discuss on another show, but holy bonkers. But it means they pick up a guy who had 5.5 sacks last year. Now, as much as we liked Pete Robertson, Cassius Marsh is a much better player in the NFL than Pete Robertson ever has and probably ever will be. And so now they have a nice rotation of Suggs, Jones, Brooks Reed, and Cassius Marsh. That's a great pickup, in my opinion, and he plays angry. And if you've seen the GIF out there, the GIF online, he has one heck of a sack celebration with the roundhouse kick.
Yeah, and he's a guy that he understands his role and plays it extremely well. And to me, that's viable or vital as a backup. It's not he understands he's not a guy that's going to push for the starting role. He understands he's a guy that is going to get limited reps, and he understands that he's a guy that's really good at that job. And so we'll see how it works out. I think it was a slam dunk signing, like you.
Yes. And getting back to the practice squad, is very interesting who they ended up picking up. And probably the most intriguing guy is the quarterback, and that's Kyle Sloter, who is a preseason sensation. If you paid attention to Broncos football when he was playing there in the preseason, or Vikings football, fans just adore him. They adore Kyle Sloter. They all wanted him to be the backup quarterback the last 2 years. And he chose to play for the Cardinals. He's 25 years old. He spent all last year on the active roster, and I'm guessing they're giving him the treatment that they thought for Drew Anderson, where, hey, potentially he could be their number two in a year from now when they decide probably to move on for Brett Hundley, which we'll get to see Kyle Sloter in the preseason next year, which means all sorts of clicks for us, because the Cardinals fans will fall in love with this guy.
Yeah, and – And it was one of those conversations we had about Drew Anderson. And the fact was they really liked Drew Anderson. They did. But every once in a while, things happen that nobody sees coming. And that first one was Slaughter. He allegedly even had offers to be on like active rosters, but he liked the fit with the Arizona Cardinals the best. And so he was excited about that and that opportunity. I was shocked personally. I don't know about you, but I was shocked to see this kind of happen because Slaughter was the backup for the Vikings last year. So, I mean, he's never played in a game, but he was the backup, and it's just that's a weird thing to see. It really is.
And so, essentially, they liked Drew Anderson, but hey, Kyle Slaughter, we like him better. They liked Nate Brooks. That's why they brought him back to the practice squad. But then when they saw Jalen Davis, they're like, oh, we like him more. Instead of Ontarius Dora, it's Pete Robertson, and then they added Kylie Fitz. Instead of A.J. Richardson, a guy they kind of liked in the preseason, they go and get the speedster, former Ohio State guy Johnny Dixon. So it was just a case where they had guys they liked, and they're like, oh, we like these guys more. And so rather than initially signing those guys, they bring back the Cardinals guys and then go, oh, never mind. And so these guys sign their practice squad contract. They're like, all right, $8,000 this week. Wait, no.
Yeah, and I mean, like, you still feel bad for them because that's a tough break. But in the end, they, you know, they got the guys they wanted to get. I think the two biggest ones were Slaughter and Pete Robertson. We'll see kind of how everybody else does. But I think those were the two main guys that they were interested in picking up.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we're going to talk about now we start with the predictions and previews for the coming season. We're going to talk player predictions, statistics, so on and so forth. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We're now at the prediction and preview part of that. And let's talk individual players. Just how much are these players going to produce this year? I think we should, number one, naturally, of course, we have to talk about Kyler Murray first and foremost. What are reasonable expectations? Because I waver between, okay, I'm going to be reasonable, and then thinking he's going to set the world on fire.
Yeah, and, you know, this is a tough one because when you project stats, it's hard to project somebody like Kyler because he's so unknown. It's so different from anything that we've ever seen. You know, but at the same time, you look at it and you can't, like you said, you can't help but be excited about the opportunity that he's being afforded. And, you know, quite frankly, the fact that he's likely going to have a chance to put up a ton of garbage time numbers and things of that nature in year one. I think for me, when you look at it, I think you're going to be right around the 4,000-yard mark, between 37, you know, 100 and 4,100 yards passing. The bigger question to me is how many yards rushing is he going to have? And I think he's going to have, you know, probably right around in that 400 to 500 yard range. So I think you're looking right around 4,500 total yards. And I would guess probably 30 total touchdowns in the first year, which is astronomical, by the way.
That is goodness. I mean, think about it. Last year, Josh Rosen threw 11 touchdown passes. 11. and so I am that sort of optimistic as well. I anticipate he will set a Cardinals quarterback rushing record, which would be, I believe, 503 yards is that record. I would anticipate I see him getting 600 or 700 yards, though I could see a scenario where he gets to 1,000. I don't want to say it. No, I think I could see it because the ball's going to be in his hands a lot. But at the same time, I don't want to take away the rushing yards from David Johnson. So I'm going to say 3,600 yards passing and let's say 650 rushing. And the 30 total touchdowns I think is reasonable. How many turnovers do you think he'll have? He's been pretty careful with the football overall. If you look at his time at Oklahoma, you look at how he played in the preseason. In practice, he threw interceptions, but he was trying stuff. Would you say over or under to 15 interceptions?
I think that's probably the right over-under. I would say probably under. That's one of the things he's been really good at throughout his career is just protecting the ball. I would say like 11 to 13 is probably in the realm. My bigger concern is going to be the fumbles. Like if he's running as much as we're expecting, how many fumbles will he have? I think that's going to be the interesting kind of dynamic of the whole thing.
If you look at the running game with David Johnson, we saw him in a bad offense produce 940 yards. What is the top end that we can get from him? Are we going to see the 1,200 plus that he did in 2016? Is he going to not get to 1,000 because of this offense? Where do you see him in terms of rushing production?
I think he'll be right around 1,100 yards rushing, probably 8 to 11 touchdowns. And then the receiving one's going to be the more interesting one to me. Is he going to be able to put up a 2,000 yard total offense season? So if he's between 11 and 1,200 yards rushing, is he going to be able to get that 800 to 900 yards receiving? I don't think so. I think he's going to be closer to, a 1,600, 1,700 total yard type of season. I think he's going to be right around, between 600 and 700 yards receiving on the season.
Do you think that's because of the receiver targets? They'll use the receivers more as a result of that? Because he might have 80 to 90 catches.
Yeah, and that's why, because I think you're going to see, target wise, I think Fitz is going to have the most targets, and then I think Kirk is going to have a good number of targets, probably more than Johnson, and then I think it's going to get muddled between like a Crabtree and a Johnson, a Keyshawn Johnson, and then a David Johnson, where you're going to have those three kind of fighting for targets. And I think, quite frankly, Chase Edmonds is going to get a healthy amount of receptions as well. So I think you're going to be in the like 50 to 60 catches realm, which is why you're going to have him, in that 600 to 700 yard range, because I just think he's going to lose targets because of the not because of any one person getting a ton of targets, but just I think the love is going to be spread out between that, the Crabtree, Keyshawn. And I think Isabella towards the end of the year is going to kind of work his way into that target grouping too.
So what do you think? Will the Cardinals have any 1,000-yard receiver individually?
Depends on what Fitz does from an average standpoint. If he's around that 10-11 yard reception or 10-11 yard average per reception, I think he's going to be closer to like 900. Kirk is going to have to be closer to 15 yards per reception, I think, to get there, because I don't think he's going to catch over 70. Which isn't bad, don't get me wrong. I don't think Kirk's going to catch over 70. I think Fitz will be right around 80, 85. So, that's going to kind of feed in. And then, like I said, I think you're going to get this, like, mishmash of guys in that, high 300, low 400 range to that, you know, maybe 700 range. And that's going to be the Johnsons, Crabtree, Isabella, that entire grouping are going to have, you know, kind of that mishmash of yardage this year.
And so I, you know, if I had to make a bold prediction, like I'm thinking of doing, you know, bold predictions for the season, we could see 4,000 passing yards without a single 1,000-yard receiver would be kind of incredible to see.
It would be, and it would be, and it, but it also wouldn't be shocking, I don't
right.
think.
And here's the thing. And if you see Chase Edmonds emerging as well, maybe you don't get a 1,000. So they have a 4,000-yard passing offense with no 1,000-yard receivers and maybe not even a 1,000-yard rusher, depending on how much Chase Edmonds gets used. I mean, there is that possibility.
Right. And that's, you know, and then you even throw in guys like Charles Clay and Max Williams, and they're probably going to get, what, 60 targets between the two of them. And so, like, you're looking at, if you're just saying in general that Murray's going to throw, let's say, 600 passes, I mean, we're talking probably 200 of those between Kirk and Fitzgerald. So that's only 400 between Isabella, Crabtree, Keyshawn Johnson, David Johnson, Chase Edmonds, and then your top two tight ends. I mean, that's at best eight guys. So that's 50. That's just targets. We're talking, you know, 50 targets. And then as you take away from one and give to the other, like, you're reducing those, and that's 600 pass attempts. That's a ton of throws. You know, so I have a hard time seeing where one guy could put up like a dominant season, unless they're a yards per catch freak, where, you know, they're averaging 14, 15, 16 plus yards per reception.
Coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, we'll talk more about our team predictions, win-loss records, and then where do we see the team production offensively and defensively? That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk a little bit about the overall win-loss record. We were talking about this a little bit off the air. I'm trying to look more holistically at their record. The way I see things, I think that they can start pretty well. And this is how I see things playing out. I believe they should win in their opener. Overall, I think that they will have the advantage this weekend, not having shown anything of their offense. They're playing at home. They've got the rookie quarterback, the king. You've got a lot of excitement. And I'm big on home teams in their opener doing well. I see them kind of hovering around 500 for a while. I see a win against Detroit, a loss against the Ravens, win against Panthers, loss to the Seahawks, beating the Bengals, losing to the Falcons, beating. So I think the first half of the season, they go 4-4, but then perhaps, like, if I'm thinking about it, they might win five games of their first nine and then not win again. That's a
potential reality with the way the schedule played out for them. I mean, there are obviously factors that we can't foresee. For instance, Todd Gurley's knee. What's going to happen?
Right.
You know, Russell Wilson's health in general, things of that nature. But just from the perspective of looking at the Cardinals' schedule for the whole season, and you kind of play it out there, this late in the year after their bye week, they go, you know, they go Rams, Steelers, Browns.
They're all at home. Rams.
Right. They've got these three really difficult home games in December, and so we'll see where they're at. But we'll also see where those teams are at, because I mean, we're all expecting the Browns to take the next step. We're all expecting the Steelers not to lose anything after losing their best offensive, or their two best offensive players. Like, that it's not a problem, you know, Big Ben will just carry on in his 16th season. But at some point, even though, you know, Ben Roethlisberger, easy enough to say, is a Hall of Famer, those guys stop producing at a time, you know, at some point too. I mean, you wouldn't know it with, you know, Tom Brady and Drew Brees and all of those guys. But I mean, you look at Eli Manning and how fast he dropped off Joe Flacco, and you know, Eli and Joe are not on the same wavelength probably as Ben, but still, I mean, it comes quickly. So you look at it in that perspective, we're expecting, you know, the Browns to be good. We're expecting the Steelers to stay good. We're expecting the Seahawks. I mean, you and I, and we were, and this wasn't a negative thing, but we were talking about who their wide receivers were before the podcast started, because you and I legitimately had no idea outside of Tyler Lockett, a single, and DK Metcalf, the rookie, a single player on the Seattle Seahawks depth chart at wide receiver. And to be fair, that's kind of been their MO the entire time with the great Russell Westbrook, and it hasn't really stopped them. So, you know, but at the same time, you know, that's probably at some point going to bite them in the butt, you have to assume, right?
You'd think so. You'd think that would be the case. So I think if I'm going with this route, I'm going to say 6 wins. Now, I was on a radio show a couple of weeks ago, and I was just giving my prediction. I thought they would be in the playoff mix. I thought they would be kind of in the mix for the postseason up until December, and then things would kind of fall apart. I guess that's kind of what I'm thinking as it is. I'm going to say they win 5 out of the first 9, but only win 1 the rest of the way. I think they'll sneak a win in somewhere, and that gives them 6 wins. And a 6-win season after what they had last year, and a 6-win season when they're competitive. I want to see competitive games where they score lots of points, but maybe the defense falls apart, or they fall just short and they don't score quite as many points. Basically, a 6-win team that has hope rather than a hopeless, terrible 3-win team.
Right, and that's what we've talked about that matters, is that this team is competitive, and that, you know, winning is obviously the key, but that they're competitive, and you're seeing it each and every week. So that'll be the key to this season success-wise. I've said all along, I think this is a 6 or 7 win team, and I tend to be less of a believer than like you. But, you know, I think that this team is going to be able to sneak up on some people early in the season and play well enough to win games early. The question will be, and I think you hit it on the head, the question is going to be, can they win games late to, like, sustain what could be, you know, a playoff run? And I think that's where they'll start to fall short, is against these, you know, these top teams, to kind of that 5-game stretch to end the season.
Now, the question being this is, if we're looking at offensively, I believe this offense will produce yardage. It'll be a top 10 team. They were in the preseason. They were a top 10 offense in terms of yardage, and a middle of the road team in scoring, which will be so much better than what the Cardinals were, like, incredibly, like, amazingly better. But I think they will be a top 10 team in terms of offense. Defense, I am not sure.
No, and it's tough, because, you know, I talked about this a couple weeks ago. This is a team that really reminds me of the Miami Dolphins defense that got Vance Joseph a head coaching job. Obviously, there's not an Indominus Sue on this roster. But in the same sentence, I mean, you're looking at guys like Chandler Jones, Terrell Suggs. I mean, you got Jordan Hicks, who should be an upgrade. You've got two potential Pro Bowlers at safety in Buda Baker and DJ Swearinger. I mean, so you have all that talent. And he made, you know, kind of chicken salad out of chicken you know what with the cornerbacks in Miami that single season that he was there. And so when you look at it from that perspective, I mean, it's not exactly all hope is lost, but at the same time, you're not exactly brimming with confidence, as Jess is saying. Like, you're not gonna go and be like, oh, this is gonna be a really good defense, because you have really no idea, and you want to kind of see it before you buy into it.
Coming next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we're going to talk about the game coming up this weekend. More specifically, we'll talk about the Lions and what they've done this offseason. That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. The Cardinals play the Detroit Lions this weekend. Let's go over, what is there to know about the Lions? They have a new offensive coordinator in Daryl Bevel, a second-year head coach in Matt Patricia. What should we what type of team are they?
You look at it from the start. They've invested really heavily along the offensive line. I mean, they've got first-round pick Taylor Decker. They paid Ricky Wagner at right tackle just an ungodly amount of money. They drafted Frank Ragnow in the first round. They picked up Graham Glasgow in, I want to say, the third round. I mean, so they've invested super, super heavily in their offensive line. And then this year they went out and drafted TJ Hockenson. And the whole rub on Hockenson coming out was that he was like this super superior blocking tight end. And basically what they said was kind of what Mike McCarthy and Steve Wilks said last year, is we're going to be a team that runs the football and we are going to dare you to stop us. Kerryon Johnson, they drafted last year. They signed C.J. Anderson, who had a nice kind of revival with the Rams. They've really taken this whole idea that they're going to build this offense around the offensive line in the running game and see if they can produce that way. Then you look at their defense. They spent just an ungodly, and I'm not even joking, an ungodly amount of money on Trey Flowers to sign him away from the New England Patriots. I think they paid him like $16.5 million a year. Just crazy. They have the best run-stopping defensive tackle in the NFL, and Damon Snacks Harrison. You know, he's a special player on the interior. A'shaun Robinson is a really nice piece interior wise. I've never heard of their other starting defensive end, and I'm not even going to try to lie about it. Romeo Okwara, I don't even know who that is.
Oh, they also added Mike Daniels, who was a surprise cut.
But he's still like coming back from an issue. Their secondary is quietly really good, though. Darius Slay is one of the better cornerbacks in the NFL. Justin Coleman is not a terrible second cornerback. I mean, it's not you know, Patrick Peterson and Robert Alford, but it's not bad either. And so you look at their team, they've really taken on the approach of what Matt Patricia is, which is like, let's just be massive and strong up front. That is going to be kind of a great initial test on this whole situation with what we've kind of talked about with the Arizona Cardinals and the unknown and the offense and the defense. I mean, you're talking about a team that has come out and said they want to run the football and you know, kind of control the game that way. in the Lions, and the Cardinals are going to be kind of the juxtaposition, the opposite of that. And so we'll see kind of how it unfolds, because this is it's definitely a talented team. I'm not sure if it's a good team, but they also play in a really, really good division where, you know, three playoff teams could emerge from.
Exactly. Going back over this, it's a pretty talented group overall. And it looks like they're trying to not rely on Matthew Stafford, even though he's been one of the most prolific passers. Just hasn't taken him to any real wins. And so you've got some nice pieces in place. And it's going to be interesting to see, because I think that their style of offense might be, if they really do try to kind of do the run game, if the Cardinals can stack up okay against the run, that might play to their strength, considering they have no starting corner. They have starting cornerbacks, but they don't have either of their anticipated starting cornerbacks. And so that'll be an interesting thing to watch there. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, we're going to break down this game now, matchups and things like that. That's coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's kind of talk up the matchups. I am worried about two matchups in particular, and that would be at receiver against the cornerbacks, because you've got a very long, talented receiver in Kenny Golladay, and then another talented receiver in Marvin Jones going against Tremaine Brock and Byron Murphy. And as much as we might like Byron Murphy, and as much as the Cardinals are high on him, saying he's the fifth best player in the draft, those are matchups that are nightmares in week one.
Yeah, I think you have to let Murphy play on Marvin Jones and then just let Brock take his licks against Golladay. That's my personal opinion. I don't know. I mean, I get that Murphy is supposed to be a stud, and I think he will be a stud. I'm not taking anything away from him. It's just that's a tall task to ask a rookie to come out and guard a physical freak, like you said. I mean, a big receiver, 6'4", 6'5", that can move. And so I think Jones is a better matchup for him, and allows him to kind of focus on that. And then if Golladay goes off on Tremaine Brock, I mean, it is what it is, and we kind of expected that to happen over the first, you know, couple weeks until maybe Kevin Peterson's ready or something of that nature. You know, my concern stems from this is a team that's going to try to establish the run and really, really pound the football, and the Cardinals have not shown that they are prepared to stop that. They may be prepared to stop it for two or three or four drives, but from a game perspective, they haven't shown that they are ready to stop the run consistently, and especially the big runs. And so, you know, when you have a Kerryon Johnson, when you have a CJ Anderson, those are guys that are going to physically wear you down because they're bigger backs and kind of just wear on you over the course of the game. And then you could get a guy like JD McKissic coming in, who we've seen with the Seahawks, who is a little bit more explosive and, you know, kind of the bigger play, one touch and score type threat. So that's my concern coming into this game from a defensive standpoint. Offensively, I think, I mean, we know the offensive line is going to be the question mark every single week. So I think that's a cop out. The question becomes, if Darius Slay is able to lock down whoever he's covering, and whether that's Kirk or Fitz, doesn't matter. He is a great cornerback. So I want to make sure Cardinals fans are aware of how good he is. the question becomes, can they create matchups, and what can they get out of those other guys? I mean, if it's Fitz that is, you know, kind of getting locked down, then you look at it, can Kirk, you know, pick it up? Can Crabtree in his, what, six practices, you know, can he make an impact? Is Keyshawn Johnson ready to go? Charles Clay, you know, that's what the question becomes, is can you take advantage of, you know, a Justin Coleman, a Rashawn Melvin, those, you know, other corners, and can you make plays? The other thing is this, the linebackers, despite the fact that they've spent a lot of time and draft picks, their linebackers aren't great. So that's the other thing that you have to look at, is can you create those mismatches where you're getting Devin Kennard and Christian Jones in space and able to take advantage of maybe guys that aren't as athletic. That's where this game to me is going to be won and lost, is if they can create the matchups and take advantage of those matchups for the first time in seeing this offense for real. And obviously every week we're going to talk about the offensive line. I just feel like it's going to be beating a dead horse every week.
And I think, yeah, David Johnson's going to be critically important this week. He's going to have to get a little bit in the running game. They do have a very strong defensive front.
Yeah, Harrison and Robinson is going to be a tough duo. I mean, Damon Harrison, that's the thing. Damon Harrison is the best run-stopping defensive lineman. I mean,
now, here's the thing. Who comes off the field on their defensive line when they go nickel? Because we figure that the Cardinals are going to go 3 and 4 wide most of the game, which could nullify some of that they have on that front.
And that's what you're hoping to see. And the other question is if you can get – so here's the other, like, dirty secret is, so they drafted Jelani Tavai. I can't remember where he's out of, but he's supposed to be kind of like a coverage guy. He's out of Hawaii in the second round, kind of like a shocking pick to a lot of people. But he's supposed to be a coverage guy. So if you can get Jared Davis and Jelani Tavai on the field, you're all of a sudden, even as great as Damon Harrison is, you're all of a sudden you're at a good spot to run the ball from those spread formations. Because now you've got them taking out Devin Kennard and Christian Jones. And can you take advantage of the less talented run defenders in Davis and Tavai?
And ultimately, the turnover game will come into play. Will Kyler Murray be able to – will he look like he did against the Vikings, or will he look more like against the Raiders? Now, Cliff Kingsbury said that Matt Patricia's not necessarily – his MO isn't really to bring the heavy pressure with the blitz. They might have to do that because I think Murray – with regular pressure is going to, like, with regular rush is going to be able to pick apart this team, or at least maybe not necessarily pick them apart, but make them pay one way or the other.
So the unique thing about Murray and what it is now that, you know, and we'll see how it works out, but theoretically is that he makes teams play 11 on 11. So, you know, on offense, a lot of times you don't have to – I mean, Josh Rosen, Carson Palmer, Kurt Warner, the guys that we've seen in Arizona, that you don't have to worry about them running. So, inevitably, each game you're playing 10 on 11. So, you know, because there's only 10 guys that you kind of have to follow or work against in the offense. Now you're playing 11 on 11 football, which means – that a lot of times you have to run zone coverages so you can see where the quarterback is. You have to be able to – because if you turn and run in man and then you abandon your zone, that's when big plays can happen from the quarterback running game. We've seen it forever with Russell Wilson, right? Like they have him in third and forever, and then all of a sudden – He runs for a long first down, or he escapes, and then guys can't cover for that long in man. However, Cliff's offense is built to thrive on zone coverages, finding windows and hitting them quickly. And that's kind of where the key is to this, is if a team can get pressure with four or five, then those zone coverages work. If they have to bring six or seven, they better be getting consistent pressure, because if not, Kyler's going to have 200 yards rushing in the game, because he's going to just take off when the backs are turned and when lanes open up in the rushing game. So that's the whole idea behind, obviously that's all the positives that, you know, we're talking about, but that's the whole idea behind Kyler and this Kliff offense, and why Kliff has wanted Kyler in this offense, because it adds a dimension to the game and it opens things up for Kliff to beat these zone coverages. And then knowing if they go man, then you're really asking a lot of your defense, because now all of a sudden you're asking them to either be able to have a linebacker that's going to stay with a 4-3 guy, or you're asking your defensive backs to be able to cover for a guy that can create time and space, and you know, wide receivers that'll have 5 or 6 seconds to run routes that, like, again, we've seen Russell Wilson do in Seattle.
Your final prediction for this game. I anticipate the Cardinals, if I had to pick, they will win this game 26-20. They will not get touchdowns every time, as 26 points. That's a kind of a 4 field goal game. But I kind of anticipate that, and they will do enough defensively. But I think they will move the ball offensively against Detroit. 26-20 is my pick.
Yeah, I think they're going to win this game 30-28. I think that they come back and they're able to win it on a Zane Gonzalez field goal, and kind of start off the era in a strong way, as we talked about you know, earlier, that these first 5 or 6 games really line up for them to win, you know, 3 or 4 games.
And with that, let's wrap up the show. We've made our predictions. We've talked about the roster. And that will do it for this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, episode 237. We'll be back next week. We'll be able to react to an actual game. What does the offense look like? How did they do? Did they get a win? Or were they competitive? Or did they look terrible? We'll talk about that next week. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening, as always. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.